First of all, of course, I want to thank Carola, Richter, and Hanan Badr, and Walid Osman, and everyone else for inviting me to contribute to this discussion. I have previously joined this project in Cairo, so I feel very honored to be given this extension and to be able to put my journalistic colleagues in a theoretical framework. It's very strange, you know. I mean, they're all here, and I feel like I have to talk about them theoretically, very unusual. I've been working in that area of, well, looking a little bit at the journalism profession in Egypt and the Arab region for some time, and some of what I'm going to talk about is based on a book chapter that I contributed to Mohammed Zayani and Susie Mirghani's new edited book. It's called Media and Politics in the Wake of the Arab Uprisings, and it's a fruit of a project at Georgetown University in Qatar. So the chapter is about the Arab journalism culture, but you know, you start to talk about these things maybe 2-3 years ago, and a lot of things have happened since. So it's a work in progress. I think it'll never end. So the moment when we witnessed the beginning of the uprisings in the region, now known as the Arab Spring, thoughts of a fourth wave of transitions from non-democratic governments to democracies have been evoked in our minds. I think this is really what we've been thinking about for the last 4 or 5 years. So just like Eastern and Central Europe and Latin America, we too were embarking on this fast era of democratization. We spoke and wrote about transitional media, and this is why I referred to previous meetings that we had in Cairo. And not just with Da'adi, but I mean, this has really been the topic of conversation for us media academics. But so we've had these, you know, we wrote and spoke about transitional media, freedom of the press, self-regulation, freedom of expression, and so forth. But after the euphoria, I recognize that research has shown that media, many of the previous wave of democracies that I dreamt of in the last few years, has shown that their independence continues to be threatened by political and economic elites. So it's not like a sudden, perfect situation. So as an academic, I prefer to stop and take a closer look, perhaps at more long-term view of journalism in Egypt post 2011, or actually even previous. I start previously. Literature on emerging democracies has also shown us that threats such as elites can hold the power to give licenses, evoke licenses, close down stations, pressure advertisers, punish journalists, and question policies and persons. So that also sounded very familiar to me. So in my work and study of the journalism profession in Egypt and regionally, and studying journalists more closely, I found that normative values developed in established democracies can be used to understand Egyptian journalists and can be used to understand their Egyptian journalists, but must be adapted to work in their political, social, economic, cultural, and religious contexts. Not to say that they are not instrumental in providing information, political awareness, and analysis to their audiences and citizens, but they have to be observed in their own environment. I also, in a lot of my thinking or writing, I will stand by my belief that there's an emergence of a global journalism paradigm, so that's something else that I touch upon. But again, to understand the profession of journalism, a historical overview of how media and journalism developed is imperative because it unveils the events that affected the self-perception of journalists in particular and in how media is operated in general. Now, I'm not going to give a very long historic overview, and I'll leave parts out because I know other colleagues have done that. But I just, you know, like to always rewind to the very beginning and emergence of the profession in the region. which dates back to the 1800s, as I know most of you know, with the establishment of newspapers and presses in Iraq, Egypt, Syria, and under Ottoman rule. So colonial powers did not encourage freedom of expression. So that idea of Egyptian journalists working in an environment where they didn't have freedom has caused them to develop unique characteristics. They learn to operate under repressive environments, but they also learn to negotiate their roles by at times circumventing or accepting censorship and authoritarianism and at times fighting it. When I think about that, I think about how that trait in many ways still exists, a trait that was has influenced the way journalists practice and view their profession in many ways to this moment. The system of relationships between the ruling political classes, the people governed by principles of respect to the ruler, has on and off surfaced and disappeared since then. But it was also the repressive colonialism of the Ottomans and later other Europeans that encouraged particular journalists to write for political causes and ideologies. And this is really important for the way self-perception of journalists in Egypt. Grand concepts such as Arab nationalism and Arab Renaissance were articulated in newspapers, the intellectual venues of the time. So there's a great importance in our history. Additionally, also the ideas of Muslim nationalism came to the forefront and allowed religious scholars to become involved in political discussion and the public sphere. So no matter how strong the relationship between colonial powers and the existing press were, and no matter how compliant journalism was, many journalists have shown great courage in challenging foreign domination historically. Now, by the end of the 19th century, newspapers have become the main platform for the dissemination of political and ideological movements, and the debate on nationalism, tradition, modernity, in addition to covering news events, was the norm of the day. With the birth of literary journalism in the 1930s, public and self-perceptions held about journalism were considerably high. So it wasn't just self-perception, also the way the public perceived the Egyptian journalists. Egyptian journalists became visible, often powerful, because of their nationalist discourse, making the profession a distinguished one. Unfortunately, by the 1950s, as many of these revered journalists became supporters of the post-independent state, the honeymoon ended when the leaders of Egyptian military-led revolution of 1952, revolution coup, I always thought it was a revolution, but now they call that a coup too, so. It crushed press freedoms to the ground, turning it into the instrument of government propaganda and political legitimization. Now, I could continue to talk about the historical context, but time won't allow me. And I think also many of the participants in this conference have talked about the eras that came afterwards, including Yosri and later Hafez and Dr. Amin. But I do believe that since the 50s, journalists, political actors, government officials, military officials, and business interest groups have attempted to exert influence over journalists and media professionals in one way or another. We've seen the pendulum swing so decisively towards press and media freedoms, and we've seen it swing back. For instance, in the 1990s, the era of information communication revolutions in the region, the advent of satellite TV and the introduction of the internet was a time where the pendulum was moving sort of in the right direction. It was a time of hope. The rise of social media and the interaction between traditional and social media of the 2000s can also be noted as a strong swing towards the right direction. And needless to say, the 2011 revolution and the period that followed immediately were inspirational for Egyptian journalists and journalism. Removing their shackles, these important players became a part of the fight for democracy and social change. Since then, the pendulum has swung back and forth, and in fact, so violently, I would say that it's hard to determine which direction it is going at all. But maybe, just maybe, the pendulum will start to swing back. Now, in terms of self-perception. I wanted a little bit to look at how journalists perceive their normative roles in Egypt's transitional times, see if that has changed. And I'll attempt to sort of look at that through how normative theory, as it relates to journalists working in a democracy, classification of categories of emphasis on journalism. Now, Christians, McQuayle, Nordstrang, Glasser, and White's development of normative theories of press and Hanch, I was hoping, is that how you say it, Hanch? Hanch. I was hoping he would be here, because, you know, he's my hero. Work on self-perception cultures of journalism have been the theoretical basis of my sort of continuous analysis. And despite the call for de-Westernizing of communication theory, I still find that these are benchmarks that can be used to see how self-perception and perception of their roles fit or contradict their theories. So you can even use them as a benchmark. Christians, etc., identified four roles for journalists: monitorial role, facilitative role, radical role, collaborative role. And I'll look at that again in a second. When I look at this, you know, before I even talk about it, on the top of my mind, I think about how, for example, with things like normative ethics, you know, for instance, I just organized a seminar for ethical journalism at AUC, 2-day seminar, which is really, really interesting, because so much has changed in the last few years, I see, with journalists and how they think of their role and perceive their role since the revolution. This was really interesting because we had about 45 participants from Egypt and the region, but mostly from Egypt. And it was obvious that although the ethics may have differed a little bit from one person to another, from one country to another, or even the conversation it didn't so much differ from the conversation you would hear in the Western world about journalism ethics. And as Egypt transits to a sort of new political system, attempts are being made right now by multiple groups to develop media ethics, ranging from associations to universities. And I think that, you know, this is something we a little bit left out in the discussions. We talked a lot about how government is writing media laws, how government is directing and all that. But there's also a lot of work on the ground. May not appear to be as powerful, but I think the fact that it exists is really important. Media associations, universities, communities of journalists, lawyers, academics have been contributing even to drafting the new laws that will regulate the media and develop Egyptian ethics. So Egypt is vibrant with ideas, and the expectations of the roles of journalists are something that is discussed within the context of what the new Egypt will look like, even if they're like setbacks. So I don't want to like make it sound like a wonderful picture, but it, you know, it's there, the conversation is there. Now the four roles, the monitorial role, is one in which journalists perceive themselves as watchdogs on government, business, and society. And this is a role that I really truly believe that Egyptian journalists believe in. I don't like to look at only the negative, because you know that, because, you know, I was crying with tears from hearing terrible negative stories. But as early as 2006, for example, I remember conducting a study with Joytika Ramprasad, who is now at Miami University, and we surveyed journalists cross-platform, cross-ownership. Actually, I did, because she was in the U.S., but she helped a lot with the direction of that. And we found that, you know, that Egyptian journalists truly perceived themselves as there to perform the same kind of functions that, that their counterparts did in the Western world. They wanted to be watchdogs. They believed in, you know, this sort of giving the, covering a story, you know, all this accuracy, objectivity, and whatnot. But the context was different, so they couldn't always perform the functions that they wanted to perform, but they believed in them. And maybe they had a, you know, it was a little adapted, so there were a few other functions that they felt they played that was different, like one of which was explaining more. This was after 9/11, so it was explaining to the world more about, you know, what Islam was, and the other was the Palestinian Israeli conflict. But other than that, it was almost like, really looked like Weaver's study of American journalists or, you know, whomever. So that, also I remember right afterwards, I think in around 2008-2009, Larry Pintak did a study across the region, which really, you know, pretty much showed that same perception of themselves. You know, that was what they wanted to do, and this is how they saw themselves. Now, today, in the past few years, journalists continue to feel strongly about blowing the whistle and critiquing interest groups. You may think that this is over because it's been a very bad week, but not necessarily. I mean, just before we came, one of the things that had gone viral was Ibrahim Issa's criticism of how the method in which Egyptian businessman Salah Diab had been arrested after what appeared to be a very politicized detention. But, you know, he openly, strongly criticized it, for example. I don't know if you've seen it, because it actually went viral on at least on Egyptian social media. Or you have, you know, you have all kinds of journalists who still try. I mean, we can't just look at the ugly phenomena, but look at the bright side. You know, there's Hossein Baghat, who's going to be speaking here, one of our investigative reporters, all influenced by, I would say, particularly by people like, if not Yosri Foda directly, who's brought investigative journalism as a genre to Egypt. You know, I go to these meetings of Arij, and I know he's involved with, and I meet this, I see these stories written by these incredible, sort of, for me, what look like little girls, you know, little young girls go out there, you know, and really try to beat the system. You know, they go out and they report incredible stories on business corruption in particular, you know, and political too. So so I think that, you know, looking at their self-perception, they feel that that's their role. There's a facilitative role, and that's when journalists actively take part in making decisions in public domains, a role in which they support democracy. Interestingly, again, both the work I did earlier with Ramprasad and Pintak identified the fact that Egyptian journalists felt that they are agents of social change. And earlier, somebody was discussing the early talk shows. I mean, they've gotten a little bit over the top as of late, but, you know, so many of those wonderful talk shows were our way of having a forum for public debate. Everything, you know, all kinds of issues were discussed intelligently with good respondents and interviewees and so forth. So you see that. Studies between the mid-2000s and the 5 to 6 years that followed showed great empowerment of the press through their engagement also with citizen journalism, user-generated content, and social media in this regard. So, you know, they went past the talk show and also engaged a lot with social media movement. Later, also during the 18 days of the revolution, I conducted a framing study which indicated that the Egyptian private press in particular were also involved in this role of facilitating, analyzing, you know, telling us what the important debate of the days were. The facilitative role continues, although amidst one of the most chaotic media eras that Egypt has witnessed. But I think it is very normal to have a chaotic media situation. I mean, a revolution is a revolution. It makes great changes. And I think that a lot of the media institutions, a lot of the journalists didn't all have the right kind of training or the right kind of background to deal with this incredible freedom. And I think that's why also we've witnessed some of the worst moments and continue to do so. But that doesn't mean that attempts at responsible media don't exist. At moments like this, it's depressing to see shows full of hate speech. And again, that seminar I held was actually because we had noticed such an increase in hate speech that we are sort of looking at some smart ways to combat hate speech. Intolerance in all its forms. We've seen incitement to violence. We've seen xenophobia, conspiracy theories at its height. But nonetheless, I believe that out of all this chaos, a new wave of journalism will rise. In fact, in fact, I think there will be a new wave of journalism. I mean, I don't think that the important roles of the best of our journalists, that right after the 2011 are over. Like, for example, let's say Reem, I don't think she's here, but Reem Meged has left an incredible mark in journalism. I still, when I teach my students, I still talk about what she did. I mean, this is a generation who grew up seeing the young lady who brought down a prime minister with a one-night program. So, I don't think that is over, even if it's a fair, someone is not practicing. There'll be there'll be many more Reem Megeds, and not in a negative, I mean, that's not that we don't need her. I don't mean it that way. So I think there's going to be a wave of, there'll be a wave of new journalism. And I was talking with Hisham Essim just before the night. Actually, I met with him the night before Salah Diab was arrested. And for example, he's gone back to Masr El-Youm to restructure it from a financial perspective. A lot of these projects have become financially unviable. So, you have these kind of movements where people want to go in and turn these, what were political media outlets for the last few years, maybe turn them into something that is relevant to the public, relevant to the time now, make them financially viable. I'll have to go through this quickly, but there's the radical role, which I believe was played by journalists like, particularly like Yosri and Megid. Yosri and Reem Meged, they're great examples of radical journalism, and that's the concept of when journalists are involved enough to want to bring the change themselves. It's when they strive towards greater equality and freedom in democratic societies. So, that idea always brings these two persons to my mind, so I'm very happy that the same thing happened with the organizers. Last year we talked, I was focused a little bit on some of the new beacons of light and hope, and it was the Yener portal that I know has closed down because now they couldn't withstand financially, but there's, Fatma Farag's Wulad al-Balad, local newspapers, there's Montetti, there's Zahma, which if I could just have a second to talk about, and various other experiments. And finally, there's the collaborative role, and this is maybe the worst role, and it does happen in other parts of the world, but it's when journalists feel that they need to collaborate with the government for the sake of national cohesion or, there are at times of war or so forth. And I think that really explains much of what we saw in the last year, but I think we're seeing a little bit less of it and more signs of dissent, if you will. Okay, I'm not going to go through the concepts of the journalism culture, but just want to say that there appears to be some kind of global, universal ideals that are common. You can just look at these because I want to get to my radical role. Do you like looking at yourself? my radical role friends. Mas'ilium story was quite interesting because a lot of people saw that as an attack against media freedoms because, of course, Salah Diab owns the Mas'ilium. This is pictures of the ethical journalism seminar and, perfectly common debate. It didn't matter if you were from Norway, Germany, Egypt, or Tunisia. The principles were so much the same. And I think that has a lot to do with globalization and open skies and internet and how everyone is being a lot exposed to much the same ideas. Okay, this is Zahma. And very, very quickly, three things. Zahma is a site that I'm also working with on to bring sort of highlights. We have a guy called Muhammad, what's his name? Khair. Thanks. Muhammad Khair, who's the editor, wonderful guy. And the idea was to sort of do aggregation of news, but with commentary, because there's so much noise out there. We give it a sort of like a little editorial but objective highlight, and then people can go in and read the article, and then they can also go to the original source. We translate some of the important articles in Western media so that, you know, Arabic reading audiences can access that. And, you know, these are the kind of models that I see can work. By the way, I mean, there was more written about Hossam Behgat's arrest in Zahma than there was in Mada Masr, which is really interesting, like bringing issues of importance to people. I mean, that's the idea we have with that, other than we even have like a, you know, I was helping them design this site, and I said, you know, there's so much going on in social media, but not everybody in Egypt knows social media. Not everybody's on Facebook or Snapchat, and maybe we can find a way to bring the top of these issues there, so we do that too. Manteti, and that's the local newspaper, somebody talked about that, yes, the Hiba. And this is just such a wonderful experiment. It finances itself through ads, okay? So it doesn't get funding. It's not financed by any incredible businessman with a great political agenda. It's a small community newspaper. If we had thousands of them in Egypt, then, you know, journalism would really make an impact because it just looks at really simple, small, day-to-day things that are relevant to people, affect people, and that had such an impact in the community. I think the first issue we had, or the second issue, had a little feature story about the boy who works in the coffee shop. And the neighborhood didn't understand it at first, and it was a very important article because not only was it human, but it also tackled the idea that this kid really maybe should be at school and not working in a coffee shop. So it so it tackled a big story or a big issue through, the angle of the coffee boy. And, you know, at the beginning, the community found it very strange, but they've become accustomed, and it's news that's relevant. It's information that's relevant, much more relevant to them than what is happening in anywhere else in the world. And that's something that we've never had with the centralizing of media. And finally, I know my time is up, so I can't finish everything I wanted to say. But, I wanted to say that there are all kinds of small things like, we put together, I'm one on the steering committee, an Egyptian Editors Association. We work a little bit with the Ethical Journalism Network. But, you know, this is a small effort, but there are hundreds of small efforts in Egypt, and we'll see that self-perception of journalists in Egypt become realized. You missed everything I had to say about you. Okay, and this, of course, is a great, great picture of the worst that we've seen ever, I think, in the history. We've had a lot of bad journalism, but I don't want anyone to think that this is the only journalism we have. I mean, she's not even a journalist. There's her. There's the guy who used the video game. Was it Ahmed Mus? He used a video game. I mean, and didn't even, you know, apologize about it. I mean, I don't think we should really even include them in our study of journalists or media professionals, because they're neither journalists nor are they professionals. Thank you.